I may not need all 20 minutes. But anyway, thank you very much. I'm going to be rather more general than Christine in my comments. And I'm going to bend the stick against what I think is often the rather over-celebratory account of the extraordinary changes in London we've had over the last 20 years or so, and look set to experience over the next decade or two. Certainly the kind of accounts one hears from the GLA, from the Evening Standard, from many of the academics, looking at these issues, my friend and fellow Arsenal fan, Jonathan Porteous, among others. Obviously there is a tension between the dynamic benefits of a city which is as open as London has been recently, and the feelings of displacement, both economic and psychological, that are experienced by many people who live in London. I think the account that one, that tends to be the dominant account, has shifted too far in favour of dynamism. Dynamism comes, I think, at too great a cost. And I want to just spell out what I think some of those costs are. This is not, as I say, just to emphasise, I don't think that these changes are not without great benefit, but I think we hear plenty about that, and I want to gather together some of these costs associated with the kind of population increases. 1 million over the last 10 years, almost entirely the result of immigration. 2012, only one third of births in London were to parents, both of whom were British born. London is projected to grow about another million, I think, in the next 10 years. And who benefits from this, apart, obviously, from the immigrants that come here? I think it's very hard to tell, actually. And I think there are, as I said, costs, both economic, which I'll focus on first, and rather less quantifiable, but not wholly unquantifiable, cultural costs as well. I mean, the infrastructure story, we know, infrastructure simply cannot keep up. Transport, schools, health, and so on. I remember actually, was it the last occasion, maybe the last in this series, we had somebody from the GLA, who may be here, who gave a talk projecting this, you know, further expansion of another million people in the next 10 years. And then various sort of lists of needs that London had, but absolutely no clear idea of how these needs were going to be satisfied. The housing story is perhaps the best known. We're said to need 50,000 new houses a year. And I think the last year that the numbers were done, we had 18,000 built. Huge pressures on social housing, contrary to what Jonathan just said, this is not entirely unaffected by immigration. I think 1 in 6 social housing units are occupied by foreign nationals, which means that a very much higher proportion than that would be new lets going to foreign nationals. Of course, London's companies and universities need lots of highly skilled people come in, and on the whole they do, with relatively little difficulty. But the effect on the London labour market is pretty dramatic. I think it's one third of all graduate jobs go to people who are foreign born. Over half of people in low paid work, Ian Gordon was talking about this earlier, I think, are foreign born. Wages are thought to have been depressed by about 15% in the low wage sector, youth unemployment in London is the highest in the country at 25%. London has the worst record of any region in the country for the creation of apprenticeships. Only 3% of employers recruit from school. London, you might say, is a great higher education success story, but it does very poorly, probably worse than anywhere else in the country when it comes to higher manual and technical skills. One might say that London privileges external over internal migration, which I think does raise questions about London's contract with the rest of the country. London's elites, who tend to celebrate, obviously, its success, think they don't really need the rest of the country. Indeed, they think the rest of the country rather owes them. And they don't really need a risk-pooling nation-state. Well, we did have a very large financial crisis, which you might say was generated in London, but much of the bailing out was done by people outside London. I don't think London would have wanted to bail out the banks on its own. Just to turn to some of the cultural issues, questions that I think have already been touched on this morning of high churn, questions of quality of life, questions of integration and segregation of ethnic minorities, and the issue of white flight, just to touch on some of those briefly. On the churn figure, I saw a figure, I don't know if anyone knows whether it's true or not, but I read a figure the other day saying that 10 of the central London boroughs, in 10 of the central London boroughs, half of the population moves every 5 years. I mean, that is an extraordinary level of churn. I mean, it sort of, you know, makes living London like kind of living in a sort of transit camp. Now, this won't be all because of migration, obviously. It'll be students, or a massive number of students in London, changing family structure and so on, but that does seem extraordinary. And does all this dynamism make people happy? Apparently not. According to the ONS, London has the highest anxiety ratings in the country. It also has the lowest life satisfaction rating in the country. On trust, this is admittedly just one poll carried out by the Yorkshire Building Society, so there may be a certain regional rivalry involved. But according to the Yorkshire Building Society poll, only 13% of Londoners trust their neighbours. The integration segregation story is a very complex one. I think there are areas of success, and there are areas of continuing high separation. Schools across the whole country tend to be more segregated than the areas that they serve. 75% of London's black population live in majority white areas, but less than half of black children attending primary schools go to majority white schools. 60% of South Asians live in majority white areas, but only about one third of South Asian primary kids are in white majority schools. There are several boroughs that are now less than one third white British: Tower Hamlets, Harrow, Ealing, Brenton, Newham. There's also the whole complex and difficult issue of inter-minority conflict, which is certainly a factor in London, as it is in some other big cities. Blacks versus Asians, various intra-black and intra-Asian tensions and conflicts. But what about this question of white flight? I think what is indisputable is the fact that between 2001 and 2011, the white British population fell from almost 60% to 45%. And that is a very, very big change. London, like a few other towns in Britain, is majority-minority, even if some of those minorities are white. So I think the argument about motivation whether people are leaving because, I mean, white flight implies fear or hostility of other groups, and much of the research suggests that isn't the case. It's a combination of aspiration and perhaps, well, perhaps a more benign way of putting sort of discomfort with rapid change is flight to familiarity, or sort of flight to one's comfort zone. And I think that probably is the case. But it does mean that, as in the country as a whole, there are many very, very segregated parts of London. And I think that sort of that runs counter to both London's story about itself and what people sort of think wandering around the streets. I think, you know, unlike some other parts of the country, you see much more mixing in the streets and in offices and schools and universities, but evidently where people actually live and sort of count as their main community is often quite mono-ethnic. And actually, if you look at the country as a whole, the figures that Eric Kaufman has dug up, I think were really rather worrying figures about how the proportion of minority Britons living in wards where the white British population is half, or in some cases much less than half of the population, is now 45%. Nearly half minority Britons live in areas where the white British are less than half the population, and that figure was only 25% as recently as 2001. I mean, it seems to me that that is a result of over rapid change. People do withdraw. It simply is, all of this has happened far too quickly for people's comfort. As recently as 1970, I think it's about 85% of the London population was British born. It's also, I mean, like so many of these things, it's also been completely unexpected. I mean, I remember with Tony over there actually doing an interview with Ken Livingstone, I think it was as recently as 2006, when he was running London. We said, we asked him when he thought London would become a majority-minority city. And he said, not in my lifetime. And it was probably becoming a majority-minority city as we were talking to him. So London has become a kind of the epitome of a sort of transactional capitalist space, which may be very dynamic, but is it progressive? I think not. Having said that, London is often said to be a place where people's views are disproportionately progressive. And I think there is some truth in that, although I think what people really mean by that is that more people vote Labour in London than in most other places, and that is true, although unfortunately not in Tower Hamlets. I mean, the reasons for that are pretty obvious. I think it's probably a disproportionate number of liberal graduates, one might caricature as sort of Guardian reading classes in London. There's obviously also a disproportionately high minority population, which despite many minorities anyway having extremely socially conservative views, it would really be much more appropriately reflected by the Conservative Party for reasons of historic reasons, racial justice reasons, continue to show sometimes unrewarded loyalty to the Labour Party. Having said that, I think one should not exaggerate just how different London is from the rest of the country. 60% of Londoners think that, that immigration is too high or much too high, which is about 10 to 15 points lower than the rest of the country, but it's still 60%. Again, contrary to the view after the recent elections that UKIP had not fared well in London, 17% of Londoners voted for UKIP. And Richard Webber has come up with the rather remarkable and, well, I say surprising, actually it doesn't really surprise me, because I think it's what you would expect given the rapid changes. Right. I think I only need half of one of them. Twice as many white British Londoners voted UKIP in the European elections as voted Labour. So I just leave you with that thought as a reflection of what people feel about these dynamic changes. Thank you very much.